A noiseless, patient spider. I marked where on a little promontory it stood isolated. Marked how to explore the vacant, vast surrounding. It launched forth filament, filament, filament out of itself, ever unreeling them, ever tirelessly speeding them. And you, O my soul, where you stand, surrounded, detached in measureless oceans of space, ceaselessly musing, venturing, throwing, seeking the spheres to connect them, till the bridge you will need be formed, till the ductile anchor hold, till the gossamer thread you fling catch somewhere. O my soul.
December has rolled around once again. Ready or not, the holidays have arrived. Of course, it seems like months ago that the Christmas sales started at the stores. Starbucks has been red now for over a month. Lights have sprouted up around town. Holiday music is sounding subtly or more often insistently in the background. The Salvation Army bells are ringing, and for good measure, our legislators are arguing over whether to call that great big green tree in the Capitol a Christmas tree or a holiday tree. The holidays are here. Lolita arrives at the fellowship this first weekend of December. Still, after all these years, unsure what to think or feel about the holidays. Lolita grew up Catholic, strict Catholic. Her family went the whole nine yards, Catholic school, church every Saturday or Sunday, catechism on Wednesday, fish on Friday. The family was so Catholic that it was more than just a religion. It seemed as important to their identity as their Hispanic ethnicity. But as far back as Lolita can remember, the beliefs never quite made sense to her. For years, she pretty much kept this to herself. The only hints were the occasional questions in catechism class, which just showed there might be a little bit of doubt somewhere within her. These questions, these seeds of doubt, well, it turned out these were the first quiet twists in her spiritual journey that ultimately led her to this place. After confirmation, Lolita started testing the boundaries of her family's Catholicism. Whenever she could, she skipped going to Mass with her family. Then she stopped cold turkey when she left the family fold and went out on her own, except, of course, when she was home for the holidays. Going back to church for Christmas always made her feel a little bit conflicted, much like the way she used to feel in catechism. Well, like a lot of folks, Lolita decided when she had kids that she needed to find some sort of religion to join. She did not want her kids growing up with a blank slate. After searching for a while, she found the Fellowship in Unitarian Universalism. And now, even after her kids are long gone, she is still here. Yet somehow, the conflicted feelings she experienced at those holiday services so long ago in young adulthood, well, they just seem pretty near the surface when she comes to the fellowship in December. Still, December feels like a tender season for her. Sitting on the other side of the fellowship hall this first weekend of December, Patrick had a pretty different experience growing up Catholic. He loved going to church with his family. He loved catechism. The questions that gnawed at Lolita, he didn't have those at all. But something else bothered Patrick as he sat in church in adolescence. It was the growing realization that he was attracted to males, not females. And he knew that this truth about himself didn't fit well into the picture of what a Catholic is supposed to be. The more comfortable he became with his sexuality, the less comfortable he became with his Catholic faith. Coming out of the closet in early adulthood coincided with walking out the door of the Catholic Church for good. This was really painful for Patrick because there was so much about the tradition that he loved. Well, one day it kind of hit him out of the blue that he still needed a faith community, but he needed one which affirmed and celebrated who he was. So a friend told him about the fellowship. He talked it over with his partner, and they decided to check it out. And the acceptance he felt when he walked in these walls melted his heart. It felt like he was home. Sort of. You see, he missed a lot about the Catholic religion of his origin. Often these feelings are more potent for him in December than at other times of the year. Don't get me wrong, Patrick likes our revel service. He likes our kind of strange solstice celebration. He likes the candlelight Christmas Eve services, but something is missing for him. Every December he feels a twinge of homesickness for the religion of his childhood. Sheldon walks into the fellowship this first weekend of December and takes his usual seat near the front. A lifelong Unitarian Universalist, he always feels at home here. Like a lot of UU young adults, he drifted away for a little while, but he came back pretty quickly. He came back when he knew he needed a place to belong, when he knew that he needed a place which reminded him that he really did in his heart want to build a better world, a place that kept the passion of that commitment burning. So he came to the fellowship, and he jumped right in with both feet. And December is one of his favorite times of year at the fellowship. There's a lot of continuity with his experience from childhood at his UU church, but it's also a little bit different. He remembers his childhood church would talk a lot about why it's okay for Unitarian Universalists to celebrate the holidays, but never really do much celebration. So he likes here that we're kind of unapologetic about celebrating Advent, Christmas, Hanukkah, the winter solstice, New Year, and sometimes Kwanzaa. Martha tends to sit near the back of the fellowship, especially in December. She finds the holiday season to be confusing and perplexing. She grew up in a completely secular family. Her family looked at all faiths, conservative, moderate, liberal. They looked at all faiths very skeptically. And they engaged in some of the secular customs of the holiday season, but looked at the underlying stories as irrelevant, kind of a little embarrassing and ridiculous. Well, from an early age, she found herself asking the big questions in life, especially that biggest of all questions, what does this all mean? And it was these big questions which finally propelled her to the fellowship. These big questions and the death of her father. She found herself grasping for ways to make sense of that loss, and probably also the recent milestone of her retirement, coming to the cusp of old age, kind of made her want to find more meaning in life. She had just pushed aside that for too long. So she did what a lot of us might do, which is check some books out of the library, but the answers were not clearly there for her. She needed to talk with other people about them. She needed a community of exploration. So on a lark one day, she took that Belief-O-Matic quiz on beliefnet.com and found out that she might be a Unitarian Universalist, whatever that is. More research led her to venture through these doors. The first time in her life that she walked into a congregation on her own volition and not as a guest of somebody who thought that she ought to go there. Once she got here, she discovered the magic of community, that we come together not only to share our big questions, but also to share life's joys and sorrows. She retains a large dose of skepticism, but it feels a little different from that kind of universal skepticism of her childhood. It feels a little more focused. But in December, her skepticism becomes more global, and she finds herself on edge. Even at the fellowship in December. And Emma. Emma is here for the first time today. She's sitting in the back too. She She grew up a vanilla Christian. Her family moved a lot, and wherever they were, they joined a mainline church, maybe Presbyterian, maybe Methodist, maybe Lutheran. And she found some small differences between these various denominations, but they mostly felt kind of the same. She liked them well enough, but she never really made a deep connection anywhere with any of these churches, with faith in general, and so she just kind of stopped going. And she really hasn't been to a congregation in a long, long time. So what propelled her in these doors today? In a word, despair. Too much drinking. Too many relationship problems. Too many issues at work. Too many bills that are unpaid. Too much upheaval in her life. She looked at the mirror a few days ago and found there, looking back at her, a look of brokenness. And so, something's got to change, she decided. She went to an AA meeting, and on her way home from that meeting, she thought, I might as well check out a church too. She remembered a colleague at work who talked about the fellowship every now and then and thought, well, I'll just start there. And when she walked in the doors today, she wasn't really thinking about the holidays at all. She wasn't thinking about starting her December holiday season here. She was thinking about starting a new life here. Same with the same feeling when she went to AA. It's what she hoped for as she came and took a seat nervously in the back. Well, these are but five of the complicated, twisting stories that might be in this room today. Sometimes I stand up here and I look out at all of you in the variety of spiritual experiences and journeys that you bring with you every week into this room, and I am awed. I have sometimes a little imaginary caption above each of you that has pictures and words describing your journey up to this day in this room. And I find that I'm really mindful of this, especially in December, when the meanderings of our different spiritual journey seem to be a little more urgent, a little more potent, a little nearer the surface. Now, it's obvious, but nonetheless important to say that, of course, each one of our spiritual journeys leading to this moment, this place, is unique, utterly different. Every journey here is unique. And I should add that Lolita's and Patrick's and Sheldon's and Martha's and Emma's stories, well, I made those up, to be honest with you. But nothing in those stories is unfamiliar to me. I've heard pieces of each one of those stories from you, and I have lived some of them myself. These are the sorts of stories, the variety of stories, and it's even far greater than that, that we bring with us to this community. As I've thought about transitions and spiritual journeys this week, I've been thinking a lot about the triggers that cause these twists and turns in our spiritual journey. Sometimes these triggers are sudden and distinct and obvious, and other times they're so quiet and subtle that we may not even know that they're there until years later when we look back. The stories I shared today suggest some of the frequent triggers that I hear from you. Cognitive dissonance with your current faith tradition. Giving birth to or adopting a child. Loneliness. A desire for affirmation or a sense of belonging. Inspiration and comradeship in building a better world. The death of a loved one that shakes you to your bones. A hunger for meaning. Struggling with an addiction. Difficulties in relationships or at work, or just plain old despair. And I can think of other triggers that aren't included in these stories that are common here. A serious illness, a feeling of emptiness, maybe beginning a new marriage, a desire for like-minded friends, just to name a few. And there's one more trigger that I think maybe underlies a lot of these that I've mentioned, and it is a deep yearning to become the person that we truly are deep down on our inside. The Buddhist writer Jack Kornfield calls this spiritual task the reclamation of the lost self. In some ways, I think every significant spiritual twist and turn in our journeys brings us back to that question of who am I? Who am I now? Who am I now, for example, as a new father or in this valley of despair or with this recent diagnosis that has me shaking in my boots. Who am I now? The mythologist Joseph Campbell likened the quest for the true authentic self to the King Arthur story, the quest for the Holy Grail. This quest, I think, for self propels much in our spiritual journeys. And sometimes our spiritual quests lead us to very distant places, metaphorically or in reality, only to find there something that was very close at hand, the story of the treasure. For me, that happened when I went to Sri Lanka in college. I traveled far away and I found some things very exotic to me that have continued to influence my life, Buddhism and Hinduism namely. But I also found on the other side of the world something much closer to home, a truer sense of self. I actually found in Sri Lanka the beginning of my call to ministry. That was the trigger, going so far away that helped me find the call within. Of course, the authentic self is never static. It's never unchanging. Our authentic selves continue to grow and evolve. So it's not like my Sri Lankan experience was the end of my spiritual journey, my quest for self. It goes on. The spiritual journey always goes on. It does not conclude, not until we take our last breath, or if we believe in the afterlife, long past that. Well, one of the questions I've pondered this week is whether there is something which commonly underlies these transitions in our spiritual journeys. And I've come up with a tentative answer I want to try out on you. And my answer, that it is a need for connection that underlies many of these twists and turns. A need for connection. Connection to our deepest selves. Connection to each other. Connection to the wider world outside us. Connection to nature. Connection to love. Connection to the divine. These things may propel our journey. This need for connection. We are, each of us, noiseless, patient, or impatient spiders, isolated on our little promontory, surrounded by measureless oceans of space. And so we fling out these gossamer threads to connect to something. I think that isolation is a basic human condition. Even when we're in a room full of crowded people, sometimes we can be isolated. And the sense of isolation causes us to throw out these gossamer threads to connect. Our soul needs connection. It's a basic human need. And a spiritual community can help meet that need, in my view. So one more observation about the twists and turns in the spiritual journey. Every single twist and turn is a part of who we are today. So when I look out and I see your captions above you, what I see is everything that I know of that's come before in your journey. In the stories I told, Sheldon's Unitarian Universalism, Lolita's and Patrick's Catholicism, Martha's secularism, Emma's vanilla Christianity, all these things are part of who they are today. Now this gets tricky when some of those things from our past feel very negative, when perhaps we've rejected them. But I guarantee you this, whatever your spiritual path was previously, it is sitting here with you today. It is a part of who you are. And if you act like it's not a part, if your hostility toward that part of your history is still fresh and potent, then you may have some work to do to integrate it into who you are today. And absent that difficult work, the spiritual past you have rejected may ironically and very powerfully be altering your path today. If, for example, you define yourself by what you reject from the past rather than what you embrace today, then it is that past that is in the driver's seat of your spiritual journey. You may have some work to do to come to peace with that past. I'm going to give you a little bit longer period of silence before our congregational response, and I have an invitation for you today. Whether you're here for the first time or the thousandth time, I invite you to think about some of the twists and turns in your spiritual journey that led you to this place, this day. Some questions to ponder. Where were some of these key transition points? What were the triggers that caused them to happen? And is it possible that there's a trigger that's happening right now, that you're on the cusp of another twist and turn in your journey? Let's take a few minutes and contemplate these questions.